Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
So we have hopefully paid our taxes by this time. And as a mom, we're looking forward to the kids getting out of school, which of course causes us a lot of anxiety. But we're going to throw all that aside because, you know, we're going to take a deep breath for like the next hour or so-ish, as the millennials say-ish, and enjoy our time together. But isn't it this time of year? I don't know about you, but I have this long, long list of graduation gift for this person, summer camp physicals for that daughter, registration for another camp for another daughter. It's just like boom, 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 boom. This time of year, most people think back to school is the hard part. I think it's harder when the kids are getting out of school. But just so you know, I'm not saying that to stress you out. I'm more saying it so that you can know that I feel your pain and your enjoyment and anxiety as a mom. And but we're going to put all that aside, like I said, for the next hour and have some fun on Mom Talk Radio. And I want to, first of all, thank our sponsor, Pre-Mama. Pre-Mama is the prenatal supplement. It's all the recommended prenatal vitamins that you need in a prenatal vitamin. It's available at CVS, Target, Amazon. And the best thing about it is that you will not be swallowing big old horse pills. Instead, you will be able to mix it into your juice and enjoy those prenatal nutrients that you are getting for yourself and for your baby. And now they have a lactation formula that is available as well. So if you are a lactation mom, or you are actually even going through infertility, they have a fertility supplement. So just check out drinkpremama.com and you'll find out about all they have to offer. So as I was saying at the top of the hour, we're in full swing and May is right around the corner. Hey, you know what happens on May 2nd? May 2nd is the 80th anniversary of Peter and the Wolf. And there's actually, if you enjoyed it as a bedtime story in a traditional book, there's actually an app now. It's called Peter and the Wolf in Hollywood, and it is narrated by none other than Alice Cooper. So, Mom, you can enjoy Alice Cooper in a new form, and your child can enjoy the story of Peter and the Wolf. And so May 2nd is the 80th anniversary. 80 years that story has been around. And it's really cool if you think about it, where it's gone from being a story that maybe our grandparents told to each other to being in a book to now being on an app. So very, very cool. Check it out. It's in the App Store. It's called Peter and the Wolf in Hollywood. So we've got a great show in store for you. And when we return, we're going to be talking with the author of The Informed Parent.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
Tara Haley, the co-author of a book called The Informed Parent. She's a reporter and a journalist with a master's degree in photojournalism from the University of Texas at Austin. A great school, fun city to be in. But her business today is that she had a retained placenta that required manual surgical extraction. And she's got a story around that and a very interesting one. So we will welcome Tara to Mom Talk Radio. Hi, Tara.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. So tell me a little bit about your story. And I have a feeling that it led to the book, The Informed Parent.
It did play a role in it, yeah. I had a really complex first pregnancy for my now 5-year-old, where I had had a pulmonary embolism when I was 18. So that meant I had to give myself daily injections of a blood thinner. And then I had preeclampsia, which required an induction. And then I had the retained placenta that you mentioned. So there was a lot going on. And, you know, having had that experience, I remember when the doctor first told me that I was going to have to be induced, I was actually very upset because I had wanted to enter labor without any kind of induction or anything, just spontaneously. And between that and then breastfeeding difficulties that I had in the beginning, difficulties getting my son to fall asleep at night, and, you know, there were all these different issues that they're the same issues that all parents encounter in some form or another. But I wanted to know, well, what do we know about this from research? And when you try to look for that online, you have this deluge of information, and it's all contradictory. When you try to look for it in books, you find someone telling you what their philosophy is. So, you know, there's the attachment parenting philosophy, or there's the, you know, the sleep training ideas are based on philosophies that, well, not all of them, but I mean, you know, some people are like, this is the only way you should do this.
Right.
And I couldn't find a book that would tell me kind of a broad overview about this, that, and the other issues without telling me what to do. I didn't want to know what they thought I should do. I just wanted to know, what do we know about science? That's it. And everything was sort of, you know, judgmental or promoting philosophy. And I never found that book. So I thought, well, I need to write it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. There are so many books that are written out of someone's philosophy or their personal beliefs, and not a lot of objectivity. So, do you want to talk a little bit about the growing industry that sells biological insurance and like the cord blood banking, since you kind of have experience in that?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I remember trying to research it myself when my first child was, you know, gestating. It's not a worthless venture, but it is kind of a long shot at the same time. It's kind of expensive. Well, more than kind of, it's pretty expensive. The thing is, there's not a lot of stem cells in the cord blood. So there's only enough for one transfusion if you were going to get one. And there are the diseases that it can help with is a pretty short list, and many of them are genetic based, which means that they wouldn't really help you to get a transfusion because it's your blood and your blood has your same DNA. So it might help a sibling, for example, who has that kind of problem. There are other ones that do help you. If you're the baby whose cord blood has been saved, but the cord blood companies tend to oversell what the cord blood can be used for. They list, you know, 20 different conditions that are being studied, and those conditions are being studied in trials. But just because they're being studied doesn't mean that it's going to turn out that it's going to help them. So one of the better estimates is that the likelihood you would use the blood is about 1 in 2,700. And that's a fairly large number, but there are some people who would feel more comfortable having it. So, you know, it's one of those real assess the benefits and risks. Look at your family history. If you have a family history with some rare diseases or genetic diseases in it, that might be a better reason to go ahead and invest in it.
Wow, I never realized that. The way they marketed it sounds like, or feels like, that you should absolutely do it, and there's a high likelihood that you would use it. Wow, there you go.
Well, that's marketing.
Yeah. So let's talk about caffeine, alcohol, and marijuana consumption, and how it affects breast milk. What's the thoughts around there?
With alcohol and caffeine, you're not going to get much in the breast milk. The blood alcohol level that you have with alcohol is the same amount that's in breast milk. And that sounds like a lot when you're talking about driving, because it describes how much is circulating throughout your body. But in terms of that small, tiny percentage getting into the breast milk, well, it is in the breast milk, that's not going to be enough to biologically affect your infant. So you don't have to worry, for example, about your baby getting drunk off of your breast milk. And similarly, that's unlikely to happen with caffeine. That said, there is an effect of alcohol on your letdown. It can slow down the ejection reflex. So it could, over time, cause issues with supply, or your baby just might not get it a lot if you have had a lot to drink at that moment. As far as marijuana, we don't know a lot. The problem with marijuana studies is it's hard to study something that's illegal, first of all. You have people who don't want to tell the truth about what they did. And a lot of people who use marijuana use a lot of other drugs or alcohol, so it's hard to separate out the effects. And so we don't have a lot of good evidence to know what it might or might not do. We don't think that there's much of an issue based on what's in the literature, but it's so weak that it's kind of a big open question.
Right, right. That's really interesting. Okay, and so then another, we have like 2 minutes that I want to get one more topic in, and that's C-sections. What have you learned objectively about that?
Well, we know that there are more C-sections happening in the U.S. than need to be, but that doesn't mean that they aren't life-saving procedures, which they are. It's ironic you mentioned that because I have a story in Consumer Reports coming out tomorrow related to C-sections, so people may want to check that out, looking at their rates at hospitals across the U.S. But we know that elective early induction can increase the risk of C-sections, as can obesity and various other kinds of conditions. But we also know that regular induction for a medically indicated reason does not necessarily increase the risk of C-section, which is kind of counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. A lot of people that are having C-sections that aren't medically necessary, it's because they aren't, quote-unquote, progressing, and that's because doctors are often still relying on labor curves from the 1950s. And
wow.
They think, oh, well, she's not going fast enough. Well, and ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, they came out with new guidelines last year. But it takes a while for those to get adopted. And,
right.
You know, 1950 labor curves, we're not women in the 1950s. That was a different time in our biology, and everything is different.
I think that just with those three topics, I would highly recommend that moms who are thinking about getting pregnant, or even new moms, or even if you're experienced, check out the book, The Informed Parent. Clearly, Tara Haley has done her research and her homework. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll check out that article that's coming out, and we have a link to The Informed Parent on Mom Talk Radio. We're going to turn our attention to one mom with two children who was doing pretty amazing things as a leader in her community when we return. Turning today's spotlight on one mom who has two daughters. Her name is Nina, and she has a blog, and you can follow her on Twitter. The focus today is leaders, and that's something that we don't often talk about when we talk about moms, but we all know that we're leaders. So I'm excited to have Nina with us today on Mom Talk Radio. Welcome, Nina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Maria. I'm really excited about this talk, too.
Well, I neglected to tell everyone your website, so could you let everyone know where they can find you?
Yes, it's at ninaobier.com, N-I-N-A-O-B as in boy, I-E-R.com.
Great, and we'll have a link on Mom Talk Radio as well. So let's talk about leaders and leadership.
Yeah, I agree with you that we don't talk about it enough. I think when people think of leaders, they think that you're in a company or running a company and have people, you know, underneath you, and they typically just think of it as business. But what I have found is we're all leaders because we have to lead at least one person, and that's ourselves.
One of the things that you do in your daily routine that probably adds to your leadership ability is journaling. I mean, most moms would say, oh my God, I don't have time for one more thing, but can you talk about the benefits that you find in that?
I believe that the morning routine has changed my life in terms of getting my life back and not putting it in someone else's hands right away. So I personally, for many, many years, I would just set that alarm clock a little bit earlier and find a place, whether it's in your closet or in your bathroom or at your table while the house is quiet, and I would put pen to paper. And there's just something about getting it out of your head and putting it down. There's something that solidifies. There's even scientific proof. But what it does is you're not going to really truly write bad things. You usually end up writing the good things. And what I found, it was kind of setting the intention for my day. And I truly even never go back to it, but it just gets it out there and kind of puts it out in the universe, and I go about my business. So I have been journaling for over 550 days straight.
Wow. So what time do you get up? Just out of curiosity.
Personally, right now, I get up at 5:30 in the morning. I have a very specific morning routine. It does include movement, even if it's only 7 minutes a day. I do my best not to even go to my phone or to my email or to any of those things. Minimum, it's been an hour since I've been awake before I do it, but I'm shooting for 2 hours.
Wow. Wait a minute. So you don't sleep? You don't sleep with your mobile device like I do?
I don't, Maria.
I know. That's a really, really bad habit.
I
use the excuse that I'm just afraid my kids are going to call me or need me in the middle of the night. And of course, they never have. And the one time that they did, I slept through it. But like you, I feel bad in the morning because I get up at 5 o'clock and I don't even say good morning to my husband. Like I put on my tennis shoes. That's like the first thing I do after I brush my teeth, and I go straight to the gym or I go straight to my gym in my garage. And like, I don't even talk to him until I finish my exercising because I just know I would have nothing good that would come out of my mouth at that early in the morning. So what do people find on your blog when they go to it?
I think what you'll find is pretty much just life, everyday life. What I like to do is just once a week ponder. I usually on my fan page on Facebook, I do a video on Monday, and it really is not something I think out. It's just, what did I learn this week? What's going on? What did I, you know, observe? And kind of give those moments, those little brief inspiring moments. This morning, I'm going to be honest with you, I wasn't even truly inspired, but yet I picked up a book and I really meditated on it and said, what is the message that I'm supposed to give to others? And I opened it to a random page. And the coolest thing happened, this quote came up that I had read earlier in the morning in another book. So I knew that's what I was supposed to talk about today. Organically, you know, in the moment, life, I think, is what you'll find.
So we only have 1 minute left. I was just wondering, what would be your, I guess, 30-second inspiration or reflection to moms out there who are crazy busy and just don't know where they can find the time in their day to stop for a few minutes and create a routine for themselves?
My biggest inspiration to you is the person you're with most during the day is yourself. You're with yourself 24/7. So how are you liking that relationship? The most important relationship you can have is with yourself. So I'm sure they've heard it before. When you're at your highest self and you're at your best, you are your best for everyone else around you. And when I learned that message and I really started taking that time, I was serving people on such a higher level. It was crazy. It was totally crazy. So take care of you. It's the relationship you're with for the rest of your life.
We have a link to your blog, and we hope that you have a rest of your day is great. I have a feeling it will be. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to the author of You Made Me a Mother.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
I have a feeling you guys are going to laugh because I think our next guest is pretty funny, and she has a lot of experience with writing funny commercials for Jack in the Box. And if you live, if you live east of the Rockies, you may not know Jack in the Box, but if you live west, you are salivating right now. Her name is Lauren Sala. She's in L.A. or Santa Monica, and she's the author of You Made Me a Mother. She began her career in an ad agency writing those funny jingles, and she's a devout vegetarian and just has a really interesting journey in life. And you have seen articles on the Huffington Post and Salon and Good Magazine. And she's got a cat named Cheddar. So there's her humor to start us off. And welcome, Lauren, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me. He really looks like a ball of cheddar cheese.
So that's why, I mean, it was pretty easy to name him that.
Well, does he have an Instagram account, or are you keeping up to yourself?
No, he's not famous. No famous cats around me.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so cool.
Well, it's the obvious question is, well, there's so many like complex things about you. So you were writing, you know, commercials when you're a devout vegetarian for Jack in the Box, which I've never eaten at because I too do not eat meat. And so I don't even know what they serve. I just know that all these carnivorous friends of mine love it. But you also wrote a book about motherhood and you're not a mom. So just in the next like 7 minutes, could you explain yourself?
Yes. Well, so I started writing commercials. Actually, Jack in the Box was my first job. And I just learned from there that you have to write, you know, as a writer, you have to put yourself in all these other people's points of views. And I've been doing that now for 10 or 11 years now. And so I just got really good at imagining I was someone else, a video game player, you know, a drive-through enthusiast, you know, all these people. And then it came time to write a poem for Boba Baby Carriers. So I had to pretend I was a mother, which came really easy for me because I feel like I should be a mother by now. I love kids. I actually feel a little bit bad admitting I'm not a mom yet when I'm on your radio show.
That's okay. But, that's okay. We love everybody here.
Thank you. Well, I can't wait. I just like, I'm so excited to be a mom. It's coming soon. But it was easy for me to imagine myself as mom because I'm very close with my own mom. I've seen her struggles and her love throughout my whole childhood, and I feel just like I got it. You know, she was a single mom, so I just was aware of all her sacrifices, and I just felt like it was easy to pretend I was her. So I wrote that poem. Boba Baby Carriers used it in a commercial for their carrier, and then it went viral because so many moms were watching it and crying and saying that I captured motherhood in one commercial. And so then HarperCollins called me, which was so cool because I've been rejected by them so many times. And then it worked out, and now it's a really cute picture book. Robin Glasser, the illustrator of Fancy Nancy, she partnered with me, and now it just came out, and it's perfect for Mother's Day, and I'm so excited about that, and I really hope to change my career because I do not want to write about burgers anymore. I like writing about moms.
Right. Well, so tell me a little bit about what's inside of the book.
Well, it takes you on a journey from, you know, a mom, how basically motherhood from the very, very beginning. The first line is, I felt you were a pea, then a lemon, then an eggplant. So it's just, you know, when a mom is preparing, and it talks about the truth, you know, when you're nervous, when, you know, before the baby comes, you maybe feel like you're not ready. And then the baby's here no matter what, whether you're ready or not.
Right.
And then it's basically a letter from a mom to a baby saying how much she loves the baby or the kid and how much her life has changed for the better now that the child is in her life. So it's loving, and it's a reminder of love. Moms can read it to kids just every time they want to remind them how much they love them. And also, it kind of explains to the kids, you know, how much moms do sacrifice in a not passive-aggressive way, just like in an honest way.
Well, that's really cool. So where is the book going to be available?
It's available anywhere you want. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere books are sold. And I've signed all the copies in San Francisco and New York, all over. So if you want a signed copy, you just have to go to Books, Inc. in San Francisco or Barnes & Noble in New York. And otherwise, you can just get it with Amazon Prime. It's actually pretty cheap on Amazon. It's only $11.
You sound really excited about becoming a mother. What is the thing that you look forward to most about becoming a mother?
I'm just ready for this next chapter in my life. I'm kind of like done with like focusing so much on me all the time. Being selfish. I'm ready to share my life with someone else and watch them grow up. And I am an only child, and my partner is an only child. So we both hope to have a bunch of kids and let them have brothers and sisters and whoever comes. And I'm just really ready to just laugh and bring someone else into my life. And we're
oh, and we're starting both the adoption process and the natural process, and we're just going to see which happens first.
Okay, so, well, let me just tell you then my story in like 30 seconds or less.
Oh, good.
So that's what my husband and I decided to do. We were like, okay, we've been going through this infertility. Let's just put our name in. And I said, okay. Oh, and so we got matched with a baby. And then I said, okay, well, let's just finish out this cycle. And then we'll, you know, we have this baby to look forward to that's going to be born in September. Well, wouldn't you know, I actually got pregnant that month. So we ended up with two babies that were 5 months apart. So so that's an interesting concept, and I've been there and done that. So I hope actually that you are doubly blessed as I was in my life, and that you end up with two like I do. Hopefully it'll all work out for you. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and we're going to have a link to your book on Mom Talk Radio. So thank you so much for spending some of your time with us. And when we return, we're going to be talking with Susan Verdi. She's an award-winning children's book author.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
We are delighted to have with us today Susan Verde. She is an award-winning children's book author. She's an elementary educator with a master's in reading and a certified children's yoga and mindfulness teacher for the littlest ones through young adults. She's doing a lot with kids and has a lot to offer. So we are excited that she's here with us today sharing some of her day on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Well, we're excited, and there's some things in that description of your bio that I would love to define, because mindfulness and little ones don't seem like they're two words that go in the same sentence. So how are they related? How are they related?
I can see how it would feel a little counterintuitive. But, well, mindfulness, first of all, we have to sort of get an understanding of what that means. It's a word that's thrown around a lot these days with the best intentions, but often it's not quite clear what that means. So mindfulness is actually a particular way of being aware of paying attention in the present moment and without judging that awareness or that experience. And so connecting that to even the littlest ones, it's almost like you can get them to be mindful without them even really knowing it. Although these kids are pretty savvy. So the idea is to get them to practice noticing what's happening right at a particular moment. And this practice helps them as they grow and as they move in the world and in their classrooms, helps them name their feelings, helps them connect with the community around them. It really has a lot of wonderful benefits. So mindfulness doesn't necessarily mean sitting perfectly still, which is very difficult with little ones, but it just is a way of getting them to pay attention.
And so how little is, when you say little one, how little is that?
Well, probably you would start at sort of, you know, talking age. I mean, you can certainly approach raising your infant from a mindful perspective, and then that's your own practice as a mom, as a parent. But when you're starting to get children into mindfulness, you know, 3-4 years old, once they have an understanding of playing with other people, of learning about their emotions. You know, they have emotions. Whether they apply them correctly in a situation or not doesn't really matter. They kind of know what it is to be sad or angry or silly. And then you can start practicing.
Is it too late to teach that when a child is 12, 13, or 14 years old?
Never. There's no time limit to beginning a mindful practice. It just, again, it's a practice, so it takes time to cultivate, but it's never too late. In fact, that tween age is a really great time because they're experiencing so much, you know, hormonally, physically, psychologically, that getting kids to be able to
pay attention to what they're feeling in a given moment and name it and not judge it, because they're so hard on themselves as tweens and teenagers, is a really worthwhile experience. And it's never too late, ever.
Well, that's really interesting. And what about yoga in children? Because I have a hard time as an adult sitting still and breathing. How do you introduce that to a child?
It's a little different with children. There is certainly a lot more conversation that happens. An adult wouldn't go into a yoga class and start chatting with everyone about what they're feeling in their bodies at any given moment and what's going on in their minds and how difficult and awkward this might be. But with kids, that's actually encouraged. And when they're very young, a lot of the yoga practice is games. So it's and movement and that kind of thing. And getting the still part, and you can talk to them. I always tell the kids that I teach the hardest pose in yoga, and they laugh at me.
Yeah, I can see where yoga it could be a little harder for kids. So, Susan, let me just ask you, as far as like a parent, is there an opportunity for moms to do yoga with their children? Can you integrate the two?
Yes, absolutely. You can always find a moment for yoga. And yoga doesn't mean doing, a whole series of poses in a row. Doing little things like getting into downward dog for just a minute to stretch, or a little cat-cow, or just laying on your back and stretching your legs. There's always an opportunity to do some fun yoga with your kids, little partner activities. Just a minute of it is helpful. So, yes, I encourage it. I absolutely do.
And
one of the great things is there are lots of books out there, including my I Am Yoga book, that can guide you through little activities that you can do with your family.
Can you tell everyone about your website, where they can find you, and what they'll find when they get there?
Yes, Susan, S-U-S-A-N, Verde, V-E-R-D-E.com. And on it, you'll find my blog, which has lots of wonderful tips about parenting mindfully and all kinds of other musings. And you'll also connect to my Instagram, which has this wonderful little thing I've honored to create called Mind Hugs, which are just lovely little self-affirmations that you'll find every Wednesday, just to remind yourself to speak nicely and love yourself in order to find some joy in the happy chaos that is parenting.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We have a link to SusanVerde.com, and it's on Mom Talk Radio. So check it out in your free time, right in between breathing. You can go to my website and check it out. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to those college-bound children. Yes, they do grow up, and yes, they are to leave. And once we figure out how to get them into college, we figure out how to pay for it. But we will talk all things college when we return. I've been talking to you about how in May I have four graduations from colleges. Every weekend in May, one of my kids is graduating from college, and including myself, who, I'll be getting my MBA from Notre Dame. And so I know a lot about paying out-of-state tuition and the cost of colleges. So when I saw this come across my desk, when I saw Brad of Taming the High Cost of College.com, when I saw his name come across my desk, I'm like, he is on Mom Talk Radio. And I said, book him immediately. So I am ecstatic to have him here today. He is a late stage college planning specialist. I mean, I guess that's for the parents who didn't start saving $10 a week when the child was born. But he helps parents of high school students plan and pay for college using strategies such as merit aid and a lot of other things that I'm going to ask him about. And he's just in time because my kids, two of them, are going to grad school. So, Brad, welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
All right. Thank you.
So, first of all, do. Okay, my philosophy is, Brad, that what I've learned, I don't care if I had started saving $10 a week when my kids were born, it still wouldn't have covered the cost of some of the colleges out there. So is it too late if we find ourselves with teenagers and no savings?
Certainly is not too late, and that's the whole reference to late-stage college planning.
Okay.
Some people have saved that big pot of money, not many, but there's a few out there that have a big pot of money all set aside and ready to go for college. But most families are running a little short, all the way down to some of them are at zero, of course. Mm-hmm. And no matter where you are as far as saving, late-stage college planning is, well, what are we going to do now? We've got a junior, you know, we can save a little bit, but that's not going to be the focus anymore. Now we need to figure out need-based aid and merit aid and loans and understanding, you know, what schools actually cost and which one might be lower cost and all the visits and testing and all the different things you need to do.
Right.
And that so, 2 years prior to college starting.
So what is the most common mistakes that families are making?
Some of the big ones would be assuming that you will qualify for aid or assuming that you won't, and essentially you're wrong. It's not an easy thing to figure out for some families in that it's not automatic when you say, well, you know, the guy sitting next to me at work didn't get any aid, therefore I will not. And again, to give you an example, I've seen families earning $75,000 not qualify for aid, and I've seen families earning $300,000 qualify.
Right.
So it's a lot more complicated than what did you earn or what are in your investments. It's also the price of the schools and the age of the parents and whether or not they're both working. So there's a lot of factors that go into it in order to really understand the whole process. So
right.
For most families, you got to spend a little time and actually learn the specifics for your family instead of just assuming based on, you know,
right.
Some cocktail party somewhere.
Right, exactly. And it would have been great to have someone like you when I was starting out, because what I found is that, yes, there is aid out there, but then you don't know whether or not it makes sense to take it. Like, you know, you have people at cocktail parties telling you, yeah, go ahead and take the loan. It's low interest. Let your child take it out and build their credit and you pay it back or whatever. And you're just, it's a very confusing process.
I would agree. Yeah, there's a lot of components and there's a lot of different pieces to it. And again, I caution that every family, you know, is a little bit different as far as what they should and shouldn't do. I've had parents come to me and say, well, we don't believe in loans. We're not going to take any loans. The student's not going to take any loans. And that's fine, assuming you've got other resources to tap into. And I've had other families say, you know, we don't have a lot of resources. We fully understand that loans will be a big part of our plan. And
right.
Again, there's no right or wrong. Obviously, if you take loans, they come along with interest and payments.
Right.
But for a lot of kids, it makes sense to, you know, get their degree and get out there in the workforce and start earning.
Right, right. Well, we only have 1 minute. So I want to make sure that we get your website in there. And if you could, in 45 seconds, tell us your website and what parents will benefit from by coming to it.
All right. So it's tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. And at tamingthehighcostofcollege.com/EFC, as an example, we have a financial aid calculator where you can actually calculate how much aid you're eligible for based on your specific income and assets. There's also a lot of great articles and other podcasts there where you can learn all kinds of great information about all things college.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to have a link to tamingthehighcostofcollege.com. You guys should listen to Brad's podcast because I wish I had. And there is so much to learn. And there is money out there. So don't discount it at all. I'm Maria Bailey, and I want to thank you for joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. I'll see you again next week.